forbidden and banned, the bane of bureaucrats, exposing mainstream media's weapons of mass distraction.
Flying under the radar and dropping truth bombs on tyranny.
It's Liberty Now. Yoda and hello. Welcome to Liberty Now, the podcast for discerning minds and common sense. We'll look beyond the headlines and false narratives of the dying, corrupt legacy media. We seek the truth and we can think for ourselves. Please be sure to subscribe to this show on your favorite podcast player app. And don't worry about taking notes while you listen. You can get all the links, files, and show notes for this episode at libertynow.com. So I'm excited to have a guest with me today, Michael Storm, which is an appropriate name, I think, in light of everything that's going on in the world today. Michael, how are you doing?
I'm fantastic. Thank you. I'm, you know what? I'm riding the storm out.
Yeah.
As an old school DJ, man, you don't know how many times I've used that particular song and songs like it, anything that says the word storm in it. Oh yeah. I've cut it into some intro or something.
Awesome. So, yeah, anyway, I was interested in your topic. So, you're all about, looking into anarchy. I've never been a huge advocate of it myself, but I've looked at it, and I know different people have different opinions on what it actually means, and we'll get into that. But I wanted to talk a little bit about what kind of led you to where you are now. You're a comic book shop owner. What led to that?
I've always been a comic book reader and collector. I'm not sure why. I was trying. It's funny because I knew this was coming up, and you had sent me the list of the questions, and I had never really thought about necessarily why I was ever into comics. And the one thing that I was able to kind of look back on was that I was pretty young, maybe 7 or 8 years old, when my mother had a relationship, and the guy was an artist. That was just what he did. I'd never met anybody who that's what they did. They just drew pictures for everything. That's all they ever did. He just sat around. That's all he ever did is draw. And he was really good at it. And I was always pretty good at it too. And so there was this connection there. And I think maybe that's where it started. But yeah, I've collected since I was a kid. I've had in my own personal collection, I don't know, maybe 12,000 books at one time. Yeah.
That's impressive.
The biggest book I ever owned was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, number one, first appearance, first print, in really good condition, for, probably five-figure kind of book.
Wow. Nice.
And over the years, especially over the last decade, literally, I guess, over the last decade, yeah. I've owned a comic book shop or worked in a comic book shop. There was a guy here in town that owned one when I first moved, and I'm in Topeka, Kansas. And the first comic book shop that I noticed when I moved into town was this Boom Comics. And I'm in the store, I'm checking it out, and eventually get to know the owner of it, and eventually worked there for a while and managed the place. And about 4 years ago, buddy I knew had just gotten involved. I met him through that place, through that comic book shop. He was getting involved with another couple of guys that were opening a comic book and game shop here in town, and he called me up, and I've been stuck there ever since. Up until a few months ago, it's really not that bad when I say stuck. It's the business thing. That's up until a few months ago, I had not been really home for much of the last 3 years. I'd spent that time dealing with business issues. And even though it's a comic book shop, it's still a real business. And
it
it's
is
still
a business,
here.
Yeah, just like any other.
Still here in America, I still have to deal with taxes, and I still have to deal with frustrated customers, and I have to deal with product that doesn't come in, and unsatisfied customers, and just the list of things that have to be dealt with when you're a business owner. And then on top of that, bad partners. I won't say the word criminal out loud, because that might
No, I think anybody, any of us that have got any kind of entrepreneurial bent and have been in business with other people have probably experienced some kind of change in relationship or disheartening circumstances like that. I've been through that.
Yeah, unfortunately. Then, hopefully not as bad, not quite as bad as some of the things that I've had to deal with. But yeah. If you had a business, you know exactly what
into the choir. Yeah. So now on top of that, I guess later after your interest in comics, you've been an activist. What kind of activism have you done?
Well, let's see. In terms of activism, other than just the being a voice for liberty, which I've been doing on my show now, I guess 5 years, this is the fifth year in a row, just the one show each week. And before that, I was a local member of a church group. So this is going way back. This is 12 years old. My grandmother would take me from church to church. We'd do, investigate different religions and what they were doing in them. We ended up at one church, Trinity United Methodist Church in downtown Denver, Colorado, and settled in there for a while and got to know a bunch of people. And I got to know libertarians, capital L libertarians,
yes,
and little L libertarians. And they involved me in their groups. And from a young age, I was exposed to literally the number seven member of the party, the Libertarian Party formed there in Colorado, in right around the time I was born. And this gentleman, he was the seventh card carrying member of the Libertarian Party. And he was my mentor, met him through that church. And so I've always had this connection, and I've been an anarchist all my life. I just never necessarily knew the definition, and I certainly never cared to argue the definition of it with somebody, but becoming, using my language and my speech to deliver messages from those times that I was a little kid up in front of the church singing or reading a message. And I did in all these different places that we went, we always participated. And knowing the importance of words and understanding what they truly mean, and understanding another connection with that, with liberty and the sort of the Christian values, that idea of shining a light, living the example. So I'm not going to preach to, so I went through my years of it after I was, I'm an anarchist. That's it. I got to tell everybody they have to be an anarchist. This is the only way you can do it. I went through that, of course, but now I just am an example. I just show everybody I'm a very happy, relatively successful, married man, family, get the kids back there in the background. I don't have the oldest daughter is not up there, but the others are back there. Wonderful wife, been married, been together ever since the day we met in college. And it's, I've never changed my philosophy, my thinking. Nothing about me has ever changed. Finding the libertarian values at a young age only solidified by that was about the time I was 12. By the time I was seven, I had already met and experienced conservative individuals, gun owning individuals. I'd fired guns by the time I was, I think seven was the first time they allowed me to fire one of the bigger guns for sure. Something other than a 22. Yeah. And so I was always exposed, but they were also liberal people at the same time. They were all pot smokers too. And so I was really, I'm Gen Xer. Yeah. Everything that they say about Gen X, as far as having sort of the best of all sort of the influences of the time before us, is true about me. It's been an interesting experience.
Yeah, you had a very early exposure to it. I think you and I are like-minded that way. Like I've always had a concern about the way the world is headed. And I know every generation talks about that. It's not like when I was a kid. And it certainly is true now, but I think even more so, like the change is just dramatic, like in world history, nothing like what we're seeing in the last few decades. And, you know, I guess we're both concerned about where the world is headed. And I was reading through some of your material and I came across the term that, thanks to you, I now have for something that I've been thinking about for years now. And it's the idea that every entity tends to prolong the problem it is solving. That's called the Shirky principle.
Yeah.
How did you first learn about the Shirky principle? Where did you get the name for it?
Let's see if I don't think I shared the original link that I had. So I'm not certain, but I if I had to guess, MSN.com.
Oh, really?
Was,
interesting.
Unfortunately, yeah, it was probably just an aggregated news story that I had delivered, not because I was following any particular thing, but because somebody in one of the, you know, one of the most likely larger media sources was commenting on this thing that they had read. And the link that they shared was from this effectivebiology.com place. Huh. And so literally I'm only just hearing this too. And I'm just like you, oh wow. I've known this concept all my life, but I've never had somebody put a name on it.
Exactly. And it's wild.
Yeah.
In fact, my friend literally, this is something I've thought about for years. My friend and I used to spend hours talking about kind of even more than that is about how organizations are like organisms, that, like living things with a very real sense of self-preservation. And in the context of corporations, there becomes this distributed or completely absent sense of accountability. You know, so it's, well, you know, the name like limited liability corporation.
You started off that way by forming a corporation with the notion that one of the main reasons, regardless of what all the sort of leftists and socialists might believe about corporations and whether or not they would exist with or without capitalism or with or without democracy. The fact is that people get together and they form businesses and they form contracts. And that's what that is. It's a contract. And it's a contract that protects the people who are forming the corporation from each other's actions and from the actions of the idiots that they hire to work for them. And so
But it also becomes, and you know, so I've been reading more of von Mises and becoming more of a hardcore Austrian school of economics sort of thinker, and we'll get into that. But like with regard to corporations, you know, you see the evil that corporations do, and you want, like instinctively, you want to encourage or try to regulate that or stop it somehow. And you know, you use the force of government, and you can't do that. I mean, without really bad consequences. But they can become like corporations, like just a sort of an amoeba or a shark without any conscience, with only one purpose, is to, you know, gain profits without regard to the general public's welfare. That said, you know, von Mises talks about how the consumer really is the boss at the end of the day. And we, you know, we're complicit in supporting these terrible actions, for example, you know, companies like Monsanto, or recently we saw a case where the customers did show who's boss with Bud Light. If you remember that whole advertising debacle,
yeah, hit them hard. Oh boy,
yeah. I mean, with no regard to, you know, their demographic or the mm-hmm. public. So I mean, the people do still have the power if we're willing to be conscientious and conscious and active and not lazy and sitting on our asses,
or at least respectful to the people that buy your damn product.
Yeah, at least that. So did your, I guess, early exposure to libertarianism lead you towards learning about anarchy, or do you see a difference? Is that related to, like, say we hear talk about natural law versus maritime law that we hear about?
There's a connection, yeah.
Yeah, how do you see that?
I've been through that understanding. I thought that was one of the things that was really cool about the list of ideas that we were talking about that you would say over, and the notion of that, because I don't talk about it a lot, but it is absolutely one of those influences, and that's the idea of natural law versus the maritime law. And it's an interesting rabbit hole to go down, and I've been down that hole. I own a copy of the Redemption Manual, and if people don't know what the Redemption Manual is, it's this huge book.
I'm writing it down right now.
Yeah, and it's all about how you go through weaving your way through the corporate layer of reality that exists above the real layer of reality. And the politics layer is in there. It's tied in with all of that. And it's interesting because the biggest problem with it is there's probably a lot of truth to it. It seems very obvious in its truth. But the reality of it is as you try to bring that up in front of one of these corporate judges, whether you believe about the fringes on the flag or any of that stuff, when you bring it up in front of these corporate judges, they don't know what the hell you're talking about, and they don't care because they are overwhelmed. They are there just to make money for the state. They're not there to satisfy justice in any way. They're just revenue generators for the state. It's just their job. They don't care. It doesn't matter. You have to get lucky, and you have to be willing to fight that battle. It has to be worth it for you to take on that battle of the system with that natural law argument.
You almost have to get a law degree yourself in that sort of alternative.
You don't want to mess around and mess up, because generally these guys are talking about sort of trying to take back your the corporate ownership of yourself, and how they, on credit cards and on your driver's license, they put your capital name in all capitals. Correct. And that's to refer to the corporate you. And
it's a rabbit hole,
like I said. Yeah, it exists in there, but that came long after my recognition of anarchy, and the sort of openness about anarchy has really only come along in terms of the ability to communicate it in my own platform, and that's within the last decade or so, 12 years or so, as this podcasting thing has caught on, and I've been doing it off and on all that time on the same network. In fact, I started back 12 years ago. So because you asked earlier in the question about sort of activism, and as far as street activism, I played around. I'm trying to get Dr. Paul elected in 2012.
I'm a big Ron Paul as well as Rand Paul fan. One of the few voices of common sense in government left. Before I forget.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so I played around a little bit in 2012.
I just wanted to ask Michael just real quick. For people interested in reading up on the Redemption Manual, who's the author of that?
Oh, let me pull up the digital one, because I'm not. Oh, wait, let's see. It's not going to be on this one. Okay, so the internet and technology. I'm a geek too, and I've been building my own computers for years.
Cool.
I've been on the internet since it was an infant. Redemption Manual author. And it's a combination. Let's see. Redemption Manual, 150. To Robert D. Sparkman. There you go.
Robert
D. Sparkman. Redemption Manual. You can find it on archive.org /details/the-redemption-manual.
Okay. I'll see if I can find a link for that. And I will provide that on the website at libertynow.com. I wanted to give you a quote. I've been reading Ludwig von Mises, and I'm sure you're familiar with Keynesian economics versus what Friedrich Hayek promoted, but quote, "It is true that the freedom of a man may have in a market economy, the freedom that a man may have in a market economy is not a perfect freedom from the metaphysical point of view, but there is no such thing as perfect freedom. Freedom means only something within the framework of society. The 18th century authors of natural law, above all, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, believed that once in the remote past, men enjoyed something called, quote, natural freedom. But in that remote age, individuals were not free. They were at the mercy of everyone who was stronger than they were, end quote. So does that still square with your ideas on anarchy?
Well, I'll be the first to say that I think that anarchy doesn't work on a macro scale. And I'm also the same guy that runs around saying that macro economics is nonsense, because it's not what it's about. It's about the you and the me, and that's what anarchy, it's the same thing. That's why there's such a connection between the libertarian values and the anarchist values and the Austrian school, is really simply the natural, the very nature of understanding what an economic transaction is between two individuals, and that everything beyond that is really nothing more than just sort of guesswork about what may or may happen in a larger context when you involve other people in your transaction and larger markets and different tools and yeah, it's a mechanical.
Would you say maybe at the heart of it is it's about individual sovereignty?
Yeah, well, it's about the individual choice, the individual opportunities and choices in life not being hindered by some political or social opinion that's enforced by some assumed authority.
Right. And yeah, I think we'd all agree that, you know, less government intervention or interference marketplace. Yeah. And with our personal lives,
I like to, especially when I'm talking to conservative people or libertarian people, and my show does more so than anarchists, I think, just by nature of the network that it's on. I like to remind them that we're not enemies, that there is few things that we disagree on. And I can even say the same thing about the liberals in that sense, as long and because here's what it is. I don't have a problem with conservative and conservative values, in particular individuals who have those values. What I have a problem with is using government as a tool to force them on me. I get the same message for the liberals and the progressives. So I don't have a problem with the liberals. I don't have a problem with the progressives as individuals, as people, with them doing what they want to do with their own lives voluntarily. Yada yada yada. The very simple notion then stops as soon as you start saying that you have this magical political tool that you can utilize to control me by forcing your political or social opinion on me through the system.
Yeah. Yes. And you know, I think a lot of the problems that we're facing today, most commentary that I hear, you know, in news or on geopolitics, any of this is we're looking for a political solution. Mm-hmm. A lot of the conservatives are rallying behind Trump. I would certainly choose Trump over Biden. I'll just say that right off the bat, competence perspective, sure. You know, whatever you might agree or disagree with, you know, either of them on, but, right. I think we're looking for a political solution to a spiritual problem, in my opinion. And I think in reality, I would say this, we're facing a battle of, you know, spiritual epic proportions in the world. And I've said this before that, you know, the more I read Revelations, the more I see things popping up. And I suppose there might be those of the elites, the globalists, you know, who maybe think they're using it as a blueprint to affect their, you know, one world government or new world order. Whether or not that's the case, it's just, it seems to be occurring more and more. You know,
That's
digital IDs.
It's been one of the reasonable arguments that some of the sort of more right-leaning Christian leaders, whatever they are, have made, is that it doesn't matter whether you believe it or not. They believe it. They're using it.
Exactly.
As a tool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly it. So somebody believes it, and it's occurring, you know, whether we want to admit it or not. But, What would you say, if you could point to one thing, what makes you most nervous today?
Okay, so I call it the metalarchy.
The metalarchy. Oh,
the
okay.
Metal rule.
Enlighten me.
Yeah. I think the danger is they talk about AI. What I think the danger is people trying to combine themselves with machines. Even before, if we ever get to a point where that point where we're able to download our brains into computers or whatever, live beyond these bodies, whatever of the dreams of the transhumanists are, whatever it is, in the meantime, they're going to be everything else is going to get replaced. This whole physical body is, they can figure out, get the brain out of the body. Everything else is going to be replaced. And so we're going to have these rulers made of metal that are going to be much, much. It's a technology thing, but I don't want people to believe that I'm afraid of technology, because that's not the case at all. I believe that technology is what makes us freer and freer. It's one of the things that frees up our minds, if nothing else, to be able to think about how to break free of our bonds.
Yeah. Well, anything can be abused. You know, I mean, a hammer is a construction tool, but it could also be used for destruction.
Sure.
And
it's more fun to use it for destruction sometimes, actually.
Yeah, I've done a few demolition jobs myself. That's interesting. I think AI is definitely something to be concerned about. It's interesting to me too that a lot of the technocrats, if you read the writings of Patrick Wood, he's a genius researcher on this, and he's my favorite books was Technocracy Rising, and it is this idea that the scientists can make decisions better than the people or the politicians they elect.
Well, okay, so you said this, the AI is a concern, and I would offer you a caveat, and that would be that it's the illusion of AI that is a concern, because AI itself is a theoretical thing that really, you're talking about modeling human response within a computer system. That's not what we have going on. We have a computer system that is faster than humans are at looking up the same information that we can go and find ourselves. It's not smart. It doesn't know what to do with that information, but the people behind who allow the information that the system works on, that it gets its information from, they're in control of the information. They're in control of what's going to come forward, and they have control of the illusion of AI, because all these AI things, all these tools that everybody talks about, you have to go in and program these things to have the knowledge that you want them to have.
Yeah. That is really well put, Michael. I mean, that's exactly. I don't think that we will supplant or create a true actual intelligence
I don't know if they ever will. You have to, it depends on whether or not you can reduce humans to the sum of their existence and the sum of the circuitry of their systems, or if there is a real world outside global consciousness that exists that we become either tapped into or disconnected from when we are born or die. If there's any truth to that, I don't think you'll ever recreate that, but you'll be able to get a computer that's convincingly human.
Yeah, man, I could not have put it better. That is probably the most well put description of it I've heard to date. I mean, it really gets to the heart of it, because I think and I've seen this quote from doctors when they're looking at trying to explain near-death experiences or out-of-body experiences, and they've even said, well, there is no consciousness happening in this individual. There's no way they could have been reporting back to us the experiences that they saw when they were completely brain dead. And yet they come back and tell us things that were happening in other rooms and things. Mm-hmm. And they said the only thing we can conclude is that consciousness must exist outside of the brain somehow.
In some form or another, and at least for some period of time, with this mechanical, this heavy, this is a big beast in here. Inside,
it is a beast of a computer inside between your ears. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Cool. So in the few minutes we have left, I wanted to ask you, what books are you reading right now? Anything interesting that you would recommend?
Right now and perpetually, I don't read much more than comic books.
Oh, nice. So, that's kind of your job, isn't it?
Yeah, it kind of is. I really need to be able to talk to my customers about what it is they're reading if I'm trying to sell them something, and particularly in the business of reading, because you love my little hat there, Read Banned Books. I have to be able to talk to these people about what they're interested in when they don't know that they're interested in it, because nobody, who the hell's raised to read today, you know?
Yeah.
And especially to reach younger audiences and such.
So, yeah. Well, and when you talk about like reaching audiences too, do you think that comic books are a legitimate source a way of transmitting social commentary, like important?
Yeah, it's one of the better ones. It always has been. It's really funny. You've probably heard of Gamergate and Comicgate.
Yeah.
You may not have heard of Comicgate, but it's just like Gamergate, and everybody's heard of that. It's the same thing. People saying that they're not represented within a certain industry is what it comes down to. And that claim in the comic book industry, I don't know about video games and what's going on in the back rooms of these development studios, but I can assure you that the comic book industry has always been about subversive ideas and about alternative ideas. If you were a gay man or a black man or something like that, and you weren't finding information, you weren't finding stories, tales, current information and things you want in the mainstream, comic books was the place to find it.
Right. Okay. So before we go, I want to make sure people know how to get a hold of you, or what's your website? And you're doing a podcast as well. How can people get more from you?
Yeah, you bet. Towardanarchy.com is the easiest way. That's me. I have my own little section of the internet cut out at towardanarchy.com and at towardanarchy just about everywhere else on the social media and such.
Okay.
I've done pretty good at capturing that identity.
Great. All right. So you heard it, folks. If you want to read more or learn more about Michael Storm's ideas about anarchy, worth looking into. Very interesting stuff. Man, that's great talk today. We gotta talk again sometime and get deeper into some of these subjects, man. That's really cool stuff.
And you can be a guest on my show. I'm always looking for great people. We could pick up the conversation there. We have a nice long hour, just the two of us.
Brilliant. All right. You heard it here first, folks. All right. Well, thank you again for listening today. And just folks, remember to be good, do the right thing, and please keep asking questions. See you next time.